From the National Humanities Center, this is Wayne Pond with Soundings, conversations featuring scholars and visitors at the National Humanities Center. Education and the National Economy, this week on Soundings. My guests are James B. Hunt, Jr. and Ray Marshall. James B. Hunt, Jr. served two terms as governor of North Carolina from 1977 through 1985. He's currently chairman of the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. Ray Marshall served as United States Secretary of Labor from 1977 through 1981. He's an economist at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. The following discussion is the first segment in a series of conversations about the future stakes of education in America. Major funding for this series comes from the Carnegie Corporation of New York. Here is Ray Marshall.
Well, there are several terms that get used in connection with the relationships between learning systems and the economy, and I think it's very important to distinguish them. One is schooling, and schooling is not necessarily education, unfortunately, because we have a lot of people who've got a lot of schooling and no education. And I was responsible for the Job Corps. Almost 20% of the high school graduates coming into the Job Corps were illiterate, and therefore they had schooling, but they didn't have education. Education is trained intelligence. It's skills and knowledge that people have. They don't necessarily pick it up in school. And much of the learning that goes on in the family, goes on before people come to school. It goes on the job. In fact, most of the really effective learning that people get these days is on the job. Learning has become big business in the broader sense of education. It's over about $410 billion, last numbers we've got, on the amount of money spent on learning. About 40% of that spent by American companies who have some of the most important and effective learning systems that we have. So I think it's important to make that distinction, but I'd also make two other points. One is that there's a very strong relationship between good schooling and learning. That is, the people who are going to get those learning opportunities after they get out of school are the people who've acquired the basic skills while they're in school. Mm-hmm. And that message is coming over very strong in all of the work that's being done on it. Second point is that economists have pretty well established that the returns to education are higher than the returns to any other investment that you can get. That has always been the case. And in my view, it is much more true today than it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. And the main reason for that is the kind of economy that we're moving into. It's very competitive. In fact, one of our economists got the Nobel Prize for demonstrating a very important point, and that is that trained, educated, healthy, motivated people are an unlimited asset. And that will solve problems, and that if you, he accused the traditionalists of being concerned about a population quantity problem without paying attention to the quality of populations. And I think that basic principle is, in spite of all the theoretical and empirical evidence, is very sound and basic.
Jim Hunt, let me ask you to focus on a word that Ray Marshall has just used, and that is competition. What is it that we should be after? What kind of competitive people should we be producing, both for American and international markets?
Well, Wayne, we ought to be about being competitive in the sense that we have our share, at least our share, of the good jobs in the world in the United States available to our people. We're talking about enough jobs so that we have a very low unemployment rate, but we're also talking about good jobs. Some people would argue, for example, I expect Ray Marshall's heard this argument, that we're in a situation today where the Japanese are spinning off some of their low-value, low-wage jobs to the United States.
So we've got a reverse trend.
Much as we did with, some of the offshore developing countries over the last decade or two. We need to be competitive in this world. We have to understand that we do live and work in one world. It is a global economy. Some 70%+ of the things that we buy and use in our lives every day are in international competition. And this country has got to recognize that fact and then be prepared to be competitive, to be able to compete with and succeed in that kind of world market. And the thing that makes it more complicated than it used to be at a time, and you understand that this country, certainly after World War II even, was sort of a nation unto itself. We had the capital of the world here. We had the technology. We hadn't been destroyed by war. In recent decades, we've been able to we've seen the transfer of technology. You may develop something in a laboratory in an American university, and 6 months or maybe 1 month later,
bingo,
it's gone overseas.
Yeah.
Capital can be moved by a telephone call, mm-hmm, or faster. That kind of thing has happened. There's one thing left that we can almost hold on to. It's ours. We can develop it, use it, and that is our people. Our workforce
and
in
that,
this country.
And that brings us to education.
That's right.
What do we want to teach kids? Do we want to hold up large concepts in front of them like competition? Do we want to hold up in front of them statistics about Japanese and German imports and exports? How do we communicate the urgency of this situation to our students?
It isn't just the old rote learning. People like to talk about going back to the basics, you know.
You think that's a straw man, do you?
Well, yes, I do. It you know, the old basics, just learning to memorize things,
yeah,
that sort of thing is not adequate. Now, if it depends on how you understand the basics, the new basics, so to speak, involve learning to communicate well, learning to think, to be creative, to be able to come up with new ideas and new solutions to old problems, to see something there that other people don't see.
Yeah.
So we've got to do that. We've got to have schools in which teachers use different techniques. It isn't just enough to have kids memorize things, although memorizing certain things is important. We've got to have real rigor in our system.
It's not a dirty word, is it?
That's right. And the other thing I would say, and Ray and I don't often hear this talked about, we've got to learn, our children in America have got to learn the kinds of attitudes and habits that make them good workers. I don't care how smart you are or how creative or innovative you might be. If you don't have a good, wholesome attitude toward work, you aren't willing to put the time in, to come on time, to work hard, to devote yourself to it, to really take pride in that job and in your company,
mm-hmm,
you're not going to be successful. So we've got to really learn, we've got to have people learn to think for a living, and we've got to get them to be willing to really commit themselves to being conscientious workers.
Now, you're casting the net pretty widely, Jim Hunt. You could be talking about the psychology of American child development. You could be talking about, as you said, the word attitudes. Where do we begin?
Well, let me say, I think that's exactly right. I was visiting with the Governor Mary Cuomo recently in New York. He, mm-hmm, is beginning this year in New York State what he's calling the Decade of the Child. Mm-hmm. And that's good, because I am absolutely convinced that these fundamental things, in terms of how creative you become and what your attitudes and work habits are developed very, very early in life. And I really believe, we've got our first granddaughter at and she's my wife keeps her every day almost at our house in these first couple of years. And I see that little child again. My own children are older now. You see them beginning to open up and to imitate things, and that's when that nourishing and nurturing and,
yep,
teaching the most important things happens. And so I think, as some of the recent groups have suggested, that early childhood learning and quality child development is absolutely essential.
Well, I do too. And it seems to me that, talking about attitudes, yes, one attitude is that learning starts very early, and how you learn when you're a child, what kind of nurturing you get, has a profound impact on you as an adult. See, that's what a lot of the early childhood development work is suggesting. And if you have inadequate nutrition, inadequate nurturing when you're very young. Now, Let me follow up on Jim's point about attitudes, because I think that's the root of a lot of our problems in the country. One attitude that I think is a dangerous attitude is one that seems to be fairly pervasive in the United States, and that is that educational achievement, that is learning, is mainly innate ability. You know, somebody did a study comparing Japanese and Minnesota children. They asked the mothers in Minnesota, what do you think accounts for the educational achievement of your children? The Minnesota mothers overwhelmingly said innate ability. The Japanese mothers overwhelmingly said hard work.
We're talking nature nurture.
Yeah, and the hard work is the right answer.
Yeah.
You see,
right.
if we believe that it's innate ability, then we give up, don't we? And we start tracking people early.
That's like predestinarian thinking.
That's right.
And that strikes me as very dangerous. And what we start doing with a lot of young children very early is to assume that some people can't learn, others can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, most of those people that we have traditionally assumed can't learn are going to be the people who are the majority of the increase in our workforce. So we better get over that false idea, and that's an attitude.
Yeah. In 25 years, half of the students coming out of our schools, or the students in our schools, are going to be minorities, you see, making Ray's point.
And the other attitude I think we've got in the country is to view investments in our people as costs and not investments, what I call the OMB mentality. Is you understand the price of everything, the value of nothing.
Where do we begin, Ray Marshall, Jim Hunt? What you've talked about child rearing, you've talked about attitudes, you've talked about these noble, lofty goals that we should have for our society with respect to education and the economy. Do we begin, right there with the parents? Do we talk to the students? Do we talk to local school boards? There are just dozens of avenues to pursue. Be concrete for me and be specific. Tell me about some models, for example, the kind of thing that we could look to for examples. Jim?
Well, let me say a word about how I think the nation ought to approach this. Then we can go into some of the other things specifically. I really believe that what we've got to do in this country, if we're going to be competitive, if we're going to give our people full and equal opportunity to, in the words of a great North Carolina governor one time, burgeon out all that is within them, we've got to say our people are our number one resource, be serious about that, and commit ourselves to developing our human beings, our people, as our top priority, that we do invest all the resources that it takes into. I think we do that. First of all, of course, the kinds of things that nurture and support families are critically important, because you can't replace those parents and their values and their attitudes, all those things that they impart to their children. I think a strong emphasis on infant health, quality child daycare from the time children need it, and I mean quality. I'm not just talking about somebody to look after the kids, but somebody who'll do that stimulating and nourishing and nurturing and encouraging, all those kinds of things. The CED, I think, Ray, recently did a study that indicated that it would take about $11 billion a year to provide that kind of early childhood opportunities for all the children in this country who don't get it and who need it.
Substance.
That would be the best money we would ever spend. Mm-hmm. And then to have schools in this country. I think our colleges and universities are already the best in the world. They can be better, of course. But then to focus on our schools, K through 12, to make sure that they truly are the best schools in the world. And they are not today. Some of them are excellent. But to make them the very best they can be, with the best teachers, schools in which people, the best people want to become teachers, are fulfilled and rewarded and stimulated as they teach there. And those are things that Ray and I have worked on the Carnegie Forum on Education and the Economy. But I think that's the kind of approach. We've got to say as a people, hey, we're going to put our kids and our schools and lifelong learning first.
Jim Hunt and Ray Marshall, our topic is education and the national economy. I've got in front of me here a newspaper clipping from a newspaper out west. It reads, "Educators, businessmen spar at seminar." Tell me about the relationship between the people who run this country, its economic machinery, and the people who educate our students. Is there a necessary tension? Is there a harmony? Have we got misunderstandings that shouldn't be there? How should they be talking to one another? Jim Hunt?
Well, basically, business, those people who employ folks, and that includes the public sector, are the consumers of what the educational system produces. Mm-hmm. And you have to satisfy your consumers. And especially when the consumers are the people who make the jobs and determine whether or not you have a job. So we do have a creative tension. We've got businesses saying to the schools, listen, this won't do. The kinds of people that are coming out from your schools can't do the job that we need to have done. You need to change what you're doing. I welcome that. I'm excited that they're now involved. I want them to be fully involved. Obviously, they don't know everything about education. People have to learn how to teach as well as what to teach. But I think that's one of the reasons we're going to make it now is because the employers or people who provide jobs have gotten involved with the rest of us and are going to help us make those kinds of excellent schools.
Mm-hmm. Let me add a point to that.
Ray Marshall.
That's terribly important. One of the reasons that these business people are getting involved is because of the reality, as they realize that without a world-class school system, we will not have a world-class economy. And the people who've been at the fighting edge of that competition, like the automobile companies, mm-hmm. understand that extremely well.
We're back to enlightened self-interest, aren't we?
Yeah, they also understand, though, and I think this is a terribly important point, they understand that the schools have to go through the same kind of transition they did. Mm-hmm. See, they still are not world-class. It's not clear to me that the American automobile industry is going to make it. I think in 1979-80, when we were fighting to save the Chrysler Corporation, and I was on that Chrysler board to try to save them, the so-called bailout board, if we hadn't moved to try to change our ways, that the American automobile industry would have been doomed, and we would have limped into the 21st century mm-hmm. with General Motors because it was big, mm-hmm. not because it was competitive and efficient. Now they realize that they cannot do that.
That won't do.
They've got to produce quality products at competitive prices, and therefore they need to operate in a very different way than the way that made them successful during the early part of this century. Mm-hmm. Now, what they also realize is that the schools fit the economy. See, we were turning out people who could be farmers, who could pick cotton, who could work on assembly lines, but we can't use them anymore.
We've
got to make the same kinds of transitions mm-hmm. in the school system that they have themselves been forced to make in order to become world class.
Well, I don't want to invite any necessary negativity from you, Ray Marshall, Jim Hunt, but do we look for villains? I mean, if everybody's so full of good intentions, and yet we have this, it isn't a crippling problem when we looked at education and the national economy, but there are people who say that it can be.
Well,
if we don't make some changes, I mean, where do we flush out the problems? Who is it necessary to point fingers?
I don't think so. In fact, I think that's one of the most fruitless and self-defeating activities you can get mm-hmm. involved in.
Fair enough.
The reality is that we were all part of that early system.
Yeah.
And therefore, we were all responsible. The government reinforced it. The schools reinforced it. Business reinforced it. And we had a system that was pretty good for its time. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the longest sustained period of prosperity that the world has ever known on the basis of this, what can be called the American system. But the reality is that we can't have that system anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we no longer are a self-contained economy.
Jim Hunt.
And Wayne, it's important to understand, we're going to have a fundamental and pretty drastic change in our system. All of us have been a part of the problem, and all of us are going to be needed to make this great change. But, you know, I think the American people are ready to do it. I'm finding more excitement, more interest, more willing to pitch in if people just tell you what to do and give you an opportunity than I have ever seen before. I think we have seen it primarily at the state level. We've had states, we've had some very innovative and committed governors who have given superb leadership in this field, and I could name many of them are in the South, incidentally. Business people are now pitching in. Parents, I think, are getting more interested than they have been for a while. I think this nation is ready for a new crusade as a nation now, not just as states or a local school system, to make America's schools the best in the world, which will lead us to that kind of competitive situation in the economy.
Well, let's move toward a conclusion here, Ray Marshall, Jim Hunt. Be very specific and very concrete for me. What kinds of goals should we have? What kinds of reform should we entertain? Let's talk about these things in realistic terms, in terms that match our not only our hopes but our expectations. Ray Marshall?
Well, I think realistically we can expect to greatly improve our teachers. Teachers, I think, understand that now. The teachers' organizations are in favor of doing that, and by that, I mean better education for teachers. You know, do away with this undergraduate education degree that people then go start teaching.
Get them back into their subjects.
They ought to have subject matter. They ought to get an undergraduate degree in some field and then go and get a master's degree and serve some internship like other professionals and then teach.
And professional, that's one of the key words here.
See, they have not been as professional as they need to be. And I think part of that also, I'm a strong believer in incentive systems. And some incentive systems are hidden and some are explicit. Mm-hmm. And the hidden incentive system in our education system, our school system these days, is not trained intelligence. You know, we don't pay a lot of attention to that. We judge schools other ways. You know, we allocate the money on the basis of average daily attendance, warming the seat, rather than what you accomplish. What's the value added to the learning? We're going to have accountability and introduce incentive systems that will achieve what we want to achieve. Now, the reason that's so important is that we're having a high turnover in teachers in the country because of the teachers of the post-war baby boom generation. We therefore have a monumental opportunity to greatly improve the quality of teaching. The reverse of that is also the truth.
It can also decline.
It can also decline. Yep. The trends are to decline. Mm-hmm. The trends are that you will simply put somebody in charge of in front of the school, mm-hmm. In front of the class to teach, some warm body, rather than a skilled, competent teacher. Because a lot of the captives that we had, women and minorities, who didn't have many economic opportunities and therefore went into teaching, now have other opportunities, and they're not going to go into teaching. And unless we turn that around, attract the best minds into teaching. In Japan, teachers are paid as much as engineers. They're among the highest paid civil servants, and it ought to be that way here if we really want to be a world-class system.
Mm-hmm. Jim Hunt?
Well, I would agree with everything that Ray Marshall has said. I think I would want to emphasize two points, though, as we conclude. One, and it goes right along with the things that he mentioned, we really are going to have to restructure America's schools, much as American industry has restructured the workplace for industry.
Well, we're not talking about the administration of the schools necessarily. We're talking about the learning, the content, the substance of what children are exposed to.
And we're talking about who helps make decisions and who gives leadership. Mm-hmm. Teachers, good teachers, and we've got to have them, they've got to be good to start with, and we've got to keep upgrading them and keep renewing their skills. But they have got to be seen as the key people in those schools. They've got to be given the kind of power and authority and discretion to teach up to the best of their abilities. You can't treat them like they're some kind of low-class worker on an assembly line. They've got to be thoughtful. They've got to be able to have the opportunity to try out new things, to develop that thinking that we were talking about earlier, those creative talents in young people.
And most teachers will tell you that that's not the case.
That's right. All of us have really got to commit ourselves to our schools and thus to our children as citizens and as parents and as grandparents. Mm-hmm. We've got to put it first. We've got to talk positively. We've got to be supportive. We've got to be willing to do whatever it takes and to know that the success of the schools depends on what we do. And I believe, as I said, I think this is about to happen. If we get the right kind of leadership, it's important whom we pick as president in 1988, as of course as well as governors around this country and others. I believe we're ready to make that kind of commitment.
All right. Now, readiness is one thing. The future is another thing. A very quick footnote. Ray Marshall, Jim Hunt. Are you optimistic? Really candidly optimistic? Just tell me very briefly. Ray Marshall?
I tend to be a pathological optimist. You know, I think that's the reason I keep trying to do things, and therefore I am optimistic. I think it's going to require a lot of hard work. It's going to require a lot of leadership, a lot of conflict. We could lose this opportunity. If the school systems are not transformed,
it's not a reality, it's an opportunity.
Within the next 15 to 20 years, then we could find the business community and parents losing faith in the public school system, and I think that would be a great tragedy. Right. The business community, because they were unable to become efficient. The parents, you know, the baby boomers are not going to have many children, but they're going to see to it that the ones they have are well educated, because they themselves are the best educated generation that we have ever had. And if the public school systems won't do it, they're going to get private school systems who will do all these things. These things Jim and I are talking about are not figments of our imagination. Some schools are doing all these things, and therefore they will put their children in those schools, and the public schools will develop a two-tier system in the country. We'll polarize the population. I think that would be a great danger.
Yep.
So the opportunity is to move it when the window of opportunity is open, and I think it's open. And if we don't do it, then what comes next could be very bad.
The program is Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. You've been listening to the first segment in a series of discussions about the future stakes of education in America. My guests were James B. Hunt, Jr. and Ray Marshall. James B. Hunt, Jr. was North Carolina's first two-term governor. He's currently chairman of the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. Ray Marshall served as United States Secretary of Labor from 1977 through 1981. He's an economist at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at the University of Texas at Austin. The Carnegie Corporation of New York provided major funding for this program. The views expressed are the participants' own and are not necessarily those of the Carnegie Corporation of New York. For a cassette copy of Soundings on Education and the National Economy, send $4 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Ask for program number 397. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. When writing, please mention the call letters of this radio station. Next week on Soundings, a discussion about teaching and teaching standards in American schools. My guests will be James Kelly and Sonia Hernandez of the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. Until next week, this is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Support for Soundings comes from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation and from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Education and the National Economy, next on Soundings. How serious is the erosion of America's ability to compete in world markets? To what degree is education the answer to America's economic problems? Some answers and insights from Ray Marshall, former U.S. Secretary of Labor, and James B. Hunt, Jr., Chairman of the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. Education and the National Economy, this week on Soundings.